Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behind the badge.
Stand by for Bob Surratt.
Good morning. It's 11 minutes after 5 o'clock.
You know, I don't mind looking at complaints, emails, and texts, going through messages. People take this show very seriously. WGN Radio's morning program is quite a tradition, so people are very proprietary about it, I think. So, and normally, you know, the criticism, it's just part of the business. It doesn't bother me. But there was one text that came in yesterday that I'm still thinking about, still bothers me. And maybe if I talk about it, it'll be therapeutic, lethargic, and I'll get it off my mind, out of my system. From 7:08 yesterday. Bob sucks as a radio personality almost as much as he sucks playing softball. Now the softball
brutal.
Part, the softball part is the one that I have trouble dealing with. I don't care about the first part. I get that. But you start to go after my athletic ability, and I pride myself on being a good ball player for a broadcaster. I can qualify that, but you're taking shots at my softball playing now?
And how does this person have insight into your softball?
I don't know.
Playing? Must be all your games.
I was thinking about
it's
that.
A little stalkerish.
Yeah, it's kind of creepy.
Yeah, it's very personal.
Yeah.
Are you going to join the WGN softball team? Justin Kaufman will be after you as soon as he hears that you play softball.
Yeah, you know, I've either started a softball team or been part of one almost wherever I've been.
Well, got to join.
So I do enjoy that. Do they play 16-inch?
Yeah, oh yeah, they do. And they played for the championship this year in the Media League and
lost. Didn't turn out well.
I think they need some new coaching. They could use a coaching change. Mm-hmm. Justin has his hands tied up. So, I mean, maybe you'd be the guy.
Justin might not be too happy to hear that.
Oh, he knows.
Well, I heard a rumor that because of some sort of cheating, Kaufman is going to be gone anyway. So.
Yeah, there was a scandal of some sort.
sign stealing.
So I'd like to be the player manager. I could go for that. Be kind of the Lou Boudreaux of the softball team. 5:13 right now. Let's do our first caller bit. We're here always at 312-981-7200. That's the phone number and the text, 312-981-7200. And here's our first caller of the day to go on the radio, Chris from Moni. That means you get a prize. How you doing, Chris?
Great, Bob. How you doing?
What's up? What brings you to the world at this hour?
The usual grind, driving to work.
Yeah. Where are you right now? You out in the road?
Yeah, I just got on the tollway. I live on the south side. Just got on at 127th. Going over to Christ Hospital. I'm an electrician to do some work over there today.
All right. Good for you. And you want to give us the traffic and weather report?
Traffic northbound on 294. About 175,000 miles an hour. the slow lane's roughly 8 to 9 decibels of death. So pretty much just, you know, the end of the world.
Every normal
day Chicago.
Normal morning.
Yeah. You're hired, Chris.
Yeah.
You can join Mary in the traffic center. What?
Oh yeah, we'll give it to her every day. Weather-wise, it's just I don't know. It says on my dash 40.
Yeah,
a little overcast. Yeah, can't beat it. It's not 75 feet of snow and 800 degrees below zero, unlike the traffic. But here we go. Hang on. V8, let's go. There we go. Thank you.
Hey, you know what, Chris? You just reminded me. This is a big weather anniversary because on this date back in 1979, we were still looking at the snow, and when it ended, we had 21 inches. Do you remember the blizzard of 79?
I do. I was living about 60 miles south of Chicago. I was a freshman in high school, and we got dumped on. I remember walking out of my dad's house, and it was a tunnel. You know, it was almost up to the gutter. So, yeah, I do remember it very well with the snow drifts and no school. Yay.
Yeah, 2 to 4 inches of snow was in the forecast, but by the end of Sunday, January 14th, the snow on the ground peaked at 29 inches. The blizzard lasted 38 hours.
It was amazing. It was amazing. Hey, and on a different note, I know you guys are busy. You want to get this bum off the radio, but give me the number of that guy that's talking about your softball abilities. We'll take care of him real quick.
All right, Chris. Yeah, you hold on. I need to talk to you off the air. How would you like a pair of tickets to see Supertramp's Roger Hodgson perform live at Silver Creek Event Center at the Four Winds New Buffalo on Saturday, February 22nd? Want to go?
Yeah, you know, that sounds great. I can get off that day. It's a Saturday.
Great. Tickets are on sale at Ticketmaster, Four Winds Casino, your entertainment escape, but we're going to get you a pair. So hold on. We'll make sure we know how to get those to you, and thanks for checking in. Congratulations on being the first caller. All right. Thanks for listening. Appreciate it, Chris.
Okay, you got it. Bye-bye.
All right. Have a good day. Let's check in with WGN-TV now at 5:22 and get the story that Courtney Guzman is talking about. I heard you this morning between 4 and 5 a.m. on the simulcast. Good morning, Courtney. What's going on?
Hey, good morning to you, Bob. So this is a continuation of the story that we knew so little about yesterday. Actually, when we were in Maryville at the Hampton Inn Hotel, I told you about this woman who had been found dead over the weekend in a hotel room. Well, we learned the housekeeper found her about 12:45 Sunday afternoon. So after I got off yesterday, a whole litany of things happened, a domino effect. Police ended up finding their murder suspect, the man they said killed this woman. By the way, her name is Betty Claudio. She's 44 years old. She's from Gary, Indiana. And police tracked down the man they said is responsible for killing her in the 2500 block of Waverly in Gary yesterday. There was a two hours of negotiations before the SWAT team decided to move in. And what ended up happening once they went in, two veteran SWAT officers ended up being shot in the process. They also ended up shooting that murder suspect dead. He's been identified by family as 29-year-old Keegan McCain. As far as those Gary police officers who were shot, one was shot in the chest. We are told that his bulletproof vest actually stopped that bullet. He was hit in the arm as well. And then we have another officer who was hit by shrapnel in the stomach and chin. So today, fast forward to today, Maryville police expect to talk about this case. They're going to tell us more about how Miss Betty Claudio was killed and you know, the fact that 29-year-old Keegan McCain is believed to be her murderer. So this is just a story that's been unfolding. We have learned so much since yesterday when I talked to you. We didn't know a lot yesterday, and now all of these things have transpired, and we expect to learn more information later on this morning.
You on this story all day, Courtney?
Yes, I am.
Okay, well, check back if you have any updates. Of course, we'll keep you posted on that and all the news as we move through the morning. You have a good day. Thanks for checking in with us, Courtney.
All right. Thanks so much, Bob. Take care.
5:24. Everybody's talking about the baseball scandal. So I guess initially, Dave, Major League Baseball suspended folks, and then the Astros fired
the
general manager and the manager.
Yes, right? they stepped in, and A.J. Hinch, the manager, was fired, and Jeff Luhnow, the general manager, were fired by the owner of the Astros after Major League Baseball suspended them for the season. And the penalties for the team went, you know, they went considerably deeper than that. I mean, giving up draft picks and this, look, they're going to wear this for a long time. And the people are already referring to them as the Houston Asterisks.
Oh, man.
And that's tough. You know how hard it is to win a World Series. That was the first one, the only one in the history of the franchise. And, I mean, can you imagine if your favorite team was involved in something like that and had that stigma?
Yeah, and now the investigation moves to Boston. And what's going on there? What's next?
Well, Alex Cora, who's the manager of the Red Sox, was with the Astros at one time. So they're looking at his first season as manager back in 2018. So.
Now, do I have this right? The Dodgers, now so they lost to the Astros and the Red Sox, right? Do I have that right?
Yeah.
So imagine how Dodger fans are feeling about this.
Yeah, well, they're not, and they've, you know, some of them, Cody Bellinger, their young star, has had some things to say, and they've gone back and forth a little bit, but ultimately it's in the hands of people who are paid to investigate this sort of thing, and, you know, they'll figure it out. But, look, it's one thing. You can do whatever you want on the field to try to win a game within the rules. But if you start stepping outside the rules, it's just, and sign stealing's gone on forever. I mean, it's been a part of baseball.
Yeah, but now it's high tech, except for the garbage can.
The banging on the garbage cans.
Yeah.
I mean, it's bizarre. And how they thought they would be able to keep this hushed up, because everything gets out eventually. Somebody was going to find out.
Yeah, and word is that all the players, or if not all, most of the players on the Astros were in on this, weren't they?
Well, they had to be aware of it, because they were the ones, you know, in a way, I guess you can say they kind of get off not scot-free necessarily, because there is the stigma attached, and they do lose draft picks, and that may hurt. These guys may be gone by the time those draft picks ever would have really come to fruition for them. But it's this is for the benefit of those players, or to help them. So it's
this is going to be like the Black Sox scandal.
I don't think it's going to be quite that. I don't know how it's going to be perceived in history. That's an interesting question.
Yeah.
How will this be looked at down the road? Will stuff come out that's worse? You never know. But a lot of people are pointing out, you've still kept Pete Rose out of the Hall of Fame all these years.
Exactly. Yeah,
you know, he was betting, yeah, but he's certainly paid the price, and now you've got a team which was found to be cheating in the year they won the World Series.
You know, back when people were campaigning to get Ron Santo in the Hall of Fame, I remember looking up the rules. I was just curious about what the Hall said about who should be in the Hall of Fame, and character was definitely part of it. It wasn't just your record, it was character. So, yeah, it will be interesting to see how all of this plays out historically, won't it?
Well, and I think that this year I've been kind of following, there's some websites where they post Hall of Fame ballots, and you're seeing more support now for some of the players from the steroid era who've been essentially banned from the Hall. Haven't gotten the support up till now, but now they're starting to. I think people are softening their stance on that and saying, hey, look, this was part of the game. And if you keep them out of the Hall, and I've sort of changed my thoughts a little bit on that over the years. So maybe at some point people will change their thoughts on sign stealing, but I don't think so.
Yeah, I mean, Sun-Times columnist Rick Morrissey is saying exactly that this morning, and you have to think about that, no question about it. All right, let's get you caught up on everything going on in the world here. We'll jump into the newsroom here in a second. Later this morning, we have the record collection. We'll go down into the basement vault here in the Bob Surratt building and play a snippet of a song that has some historical significance on this day, which is January the 14th. And, of course, we will have entertainment news later today with Dean Richards, our extremely local news from Block Club Chicago coming up in our 6 o'clock hour today. And, oh, I love talking to sleep experts working these hours. We'll do that after 7 this morning. And also, we talked about this yesterday. We'll get Alderman Walter Burnett on to tell us more about that kind of crazy plan to almost put a roof of green over the Kennedy Expressway. That's all on the way. Good to have you with us today. Funny story here in the Sun-Times, Colin Boyle writing, Chicago's coyote craze had a boy who cried wolf moment over the weekend, but instead of an imaginary wolf, it was a statue of a coyote at Belmont Harbor. A concerned citizen spotted what he thought was a coyote standing at Dock T at about 11 a.m. Sunday. He then called the Chicago Police Department, hoping they could dispatch animal control. Chicago residents have been on the lookout for coyotes after two incidents last week. A boy was bitten several times by a coyote near the Peggy Nottebohart Nature Museum in Lincoln Park, and a man reported to police that he had been bitten by a coyote.
These are the tracks of the common the western coyote.
Where did that come? Oh, we're playing a cartoon there? Is that what that was? Sunday's reported sighting then brought a Chicago Police Department van and four squad cars to the scene. The caller already had flagged down a freelance photojournalist who was working on a student project with a classmate. With binoculars in hand and the assistance of the photographer's zoom lens, the officers determined they weren't dealing with a bona fide coyote, but with a statue, which is typically used to scare off birds. The officers called off animal control and shared a good laugh as they departed the scene. Don't call the cops if you see a statue. It's 5:41. Let's get to Orion. We got to do an agribusiness update, don't we? Good morning.
Good morning. As we look at yesterday's livestock futures trade, Chicago Mercantile Exchange, the lean hog futures hit a one-month low on weak cash value in yesterday's trade. At the end of the day, the April lean hog contract down 75 cents a hundredweight. The February live cattle contract down 87 cents. January feeder cattle down $1.67 a hundredweight. Grain market. Well, position squaring and waiting for details on the Phase 1 China-U.S. trade deal due to be signed at a ceremony at the White House tomorrow. At the end of the session yesterday, we find the March wheat contract down 3¾ cents a bushel, but March corn was up 3¾ cents. January soybeans down a nickel. It's a busy week. Fort Wayne, Indiana, the annual farm show gets underway today. About 32,000 expected to attend. It's a three-day event, and it goes through the Thursday session. And then the American Farm Bureau Convention getting underway on Friday. It'll be in Austin, Texas, at the Austin Convention Center. And for the third time in 3 years, 3 years in a row, President Trump will address the convention goers at the American Farm Bureau Convention. That's scheduled to take place on Sunday. According to Zippy Duval, president of the American Farm Bureau Federation, who said, "We are honored that President Trump will return for a third consecutive year." Max Armstrong will be there to look in on that event. That's Ag Biz. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thank you, Big O. Let's see what's going on business-wise in the news this morning. Tattoos, piercings, brightly dyed hair, and casual dress, all becoming more accepted in the workplace. Those are the findings from a recent survey discovering more than 90% of managers believe workplaces today have become less formal than they were a decade ago. More than 2,800 senior managers were polled at companies in 28 big cities. When asked about today's do's and don'ts in the office, more than a third of managers said visible tattoos, casual attire, and non-traditional hair colors used to be frowned upon but are now acceptable. A third said the same for non-traditional piercings and the use of emojis in work communication. But more than half, or about half of those polled, said using foul language, bringing pets to work, or political decor at your desk remain unacceptable. Other taboos: streaming political events, playing music without headphones, and streaming sports events. A third said talking politics remains inappropriate. What sparked the more relaxed nature with U.S. workplaces? About 60% of managers said societal standards have loosened, and 52% cited younger generations of workers sparking the change. Remember when Casual Friday was a big deal? It seems like every day is casual Friday now, doesn't it?
Look at us.
Yeah, right. Look at us. Yeah, well, and radio used to be very, very casual. Now, you have to keep in mind that with these web cameras and the internet, I know if you go on WGNradio.com and listen, you can see us, right?
Mm-hmm. They can always see us.
Yeah.
Yes.
That is a problem.
As long as we can see ourselves on the camera, someone else can see us, too. Yeah.
But, Bob, they can only see you from the waist up.
I am wearing pants.
Okay.
Just move your monitor up when you want to cover your mouth and eat your banana.
You wonder why I take long walks around here during the breaks. It's so I'm off camera.
Oh.
Walmart is moving forward with automation in more stores nationwide. The superstore is adding shelf stocking robots to 650 stores by the summer. Business Insider reports the robots are designed by a San Francisco company, Bossa Nova Robotics, and are made to scan items on shelves to assist with price accuracy and restocking. The robots are already present in 350 stores. The 6-foot-tall devices contain 15 cameras each, which scan aisles and shelves and send alerts to employees in real time. You know, I don't like this, and when I go shopping, when I'm at the grocery store, even if it's faster, I don't go through the self-checkout lane. I like to talk to the cashiers, and I sort of feel for them when I see those machines in there because they're getting displaced, aren't they? That reminds me, I was at Costco again the other day. When I get hungry, I like to shop at Costco around lunchtime. And can't they give you a bag at Costco? You know, you buy all this stuff, and they toss it in the cart. There are no bags at Costco.
No, you get the produce boxes.
Yeah, that's
you
true.
You throw them on the bottom of your cart, and you get to the cart, and you throw the stuff in there.
Yeah, well, and they do have the giant cart, too,
yeah,
right?
I mean, it's like a small semi.
Now, when you go to Costco and you get the little food samples and you find one that you really like and you want to go back for more, do you try to disguise yourself the second time? Do you think, you know, this person is going to notice I'm back for seconds? I mean, I used to talk to the people, say hello, be friendly to them. Then I stopped doing that because I thought, no, now they're going to remember me when I come back.
Or do you do the, hey, this is really good, I think I might buy it.
So you feel a little
better about it.
Or I didn't get a good taste the first time. Can I try it again just to make sure?
Yeah.
Just wait till they're not looking and do a walk by.
Oh yeah, walk and grab. I do that when they go to restock. You know, when they turn around.
Yeah.
Yes, I do that. But I always do say that I'm gonna get some of this. I'm gonna come back for this. Absolutely. The robot expansion at Walmart, the latest move in a series of automation experiments for them. Walmart has introduced robots for cleaning floors, unloading and sorting items from trucks, and for picking up orders in stores. The superstore also recently unveiled Alphabot, a packing and sorting robot meant to speed up the fulfillment process for online grocery delivery. That system currently resides in a 20,000-square-foot facility alongside a Walmart store in Salem, New Hampshire. Walmart plans to bring the system to stores in Mustang, Oklahoma, and Burbank, California this year. The robots in the Alphabot system are able to pick and pack online grocery orders up to 10 times faster than humans. And there's this item which is of interest during January, which is dry January. You know about this, right? This is the time when many, after the holidays, challenge themselves to go the entire month without drinking. Alcohol-related deaths in the U.S. have doubled among people at least 16 years old since 1999, according to this new study. It showed that nearly 1 million alcohol-related deaths were recorded from 1999 to 2017. Let's be careful out there. It's 5:52. We mentioned this earlier, and it's quite a Chicago anniversary, the blizzard of 79. 36 hours of snow, wind gusts near 40 miles an hour. 5 people actually died during the blizzard, 15 others seriously injured due to conditions created by that storm. One of the 5 deaths came when a snowplow driver went berserk hitting 34 cars and ramming a man. O'Hare was closed. All flights were grounded for 96 hours from January 13 to January 15. Back in 79. The cold weather and snowfall throughout the rest of January and February resulted in frozen tracks throughout the Chicago system. Commuters overwhelmed the capacity of CTA buses, causing bus commutes that normally would have taken 30 to 45 minutes to take up to several hours to avoid huge snow drifts in the streets. The overcrowded buses were obliged to take numerous detours, adding additional time to the commute. You guys remember that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, do I ever. I had a 1975 Honda Civic, Bob, that I parked on the street in front of my apartment building. I didn't see the thing for like a month and a half. It got between the plows and the snow. It just got buried.
Well, snow stayed on the ground until March 6th.
It was crazy.
Yeah, I don't remember how many. I was in high school, and I don't remember how many days we had off. Must have had quite a few. I don't remember.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what I was doing, where I was working. 1979. Let's see. I think I was about to start at Channel 2. Because I was in my last year there playing the hits for the kids on the Big 89, and
kids like Mary.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
that's
I remember you, Bob.
You were the one.
Yeah, on my way to pom-pom practice.
Yeah, and of course the big news from the blizzard of 79 was political. The city's inadequate response was blamed primarily on Mayor Bolandic. Remember, he had assumed the office after Mayor Richard J. Daley died in 1976. And since that time, anyone in office in City Hall has made sure that the snow removal has been smooth because they know what happens if it's not. And I can still remember the moment of doom for Mayor Bolandic. It really happened when he went on the Channel 2 News, the 10 o'clock news with Bill Curtis and Walter Jacobson, and said, everything's fine. We're clearing the snow. It's all good. And that was the end of Mayor Bolandic, pretty much.
Yeah, it was.
5:55. Let's get the market outlook now. More business stuff from Steve in the newsroom.
Thanks, Bob. Sponsored by Associated Bank. Inflation figures for December come out today. Analysts see inflation increasing 0.2% over November and 2.2% higher than December of 2019. Numbers due out at about 7:30 this morning. The NFIB Small Business Optimism Index is also due out today. China trade data coming as well. A couple of earnings on the calendar. Delta Airlines and Citigroup. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Tuesday, January the 14th.
Checking our texts here at 312-981-7200 from 708. Bob, did you forget the storm of 67? No, I didn't, Kevin. The great blizzard of 67. That was even worse than the blizzard of 79, as I recall. Let's see here. The email. I need to tell you that that's up and running now. If you'd like to get in touch with us that way, we have an email, bobshow@wgnradio.com. Not Bob's show, but Bob's show. There's a BS in the middle. That's easy to remember. bobshow@wgnradio.com. Good way to stay in touch with us. It is 6:10. Good morning to you. People are talking about the baseball scandal and writing about it. In the Trib, Paul Sullivan had an interesting take on this. He said, unlike the Black Sox, who had eight players banned from baseball after throwing the 1919 World Series to the Reds, the Astros got off relatively easy with the loss of top draft choices, a record $5 million fine, and one-year suspensions for the general manager and manager who were subsequently fired by the team. You think they got off easy, Dave?
I don't think they got off easy. No. I mean, I think this is by... I think what people expected, there was likely going to be some sort of punishment. But, rarely do you see someone suspended for a year. And, of course, then ownership stepped in and fired Hench and Lou. Now, I remember when Paul Hornung and Alex Karras were suspended by Pete Rozelle for a season, and that was
for gambling.
Right? For gambling, I mean, a different scenario. And of course, Pete Rozelle took a very strong stand against gambling. Remember, Joe Namath was prohibited from owning a bar where. Hoodlums gather, right. Known yeah. Hoodlums, but yeah, I mean, I think this is a strong message for Major League Baseball that in this day, remember a few years ago, Bob, this was around the time that this all happened, that an edict came down that coaches couldn't be wearing, or maybe players too, couldn't be wearing smartwatches in the dugout.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, because there's. We're surrounded by technology, and if you think about it, there are ways that you can figure out if you're smart enough and tech-savvy enough to circumvent the rules.
Any word on whether Major League Baseball is now going to ban garbage cans? Do we know?
I think that's the less technologically savvy part of this whole deal. Yeah, I don't think so. But
6:13 right now.
Good morning.
Well, good morning, everyone.
Now the top 6 at 6 with Bob Saras on WGN Radio.
This is what we do to make sure you're informed on everything you need to know at about 6:17. First up, Metra may go cashless on trains. The primary reason for considering the policy change is to speed up the ticketing process. Cash fares paid on board now include a $5 surcharge. The policy change, floated by Metra CEO Jim Derwinski at the agency's December board meeting, would allow conductors to stop carrying cash. Though robberies of and safety complaints from conductors are rare, Gillis said cash handling on trains is still a security issue.
That's it for the CBS 2 News at 10.
No, that's not it. That's just one of the top 6 at 6. Many of the physical benefits that come with regular exercise may be mediated by a single protein group called sestrin. According to a new study in the journal Nature Communications, it may be possible to burn fat and increase endurance without having to break into a sweat. Previous research has indicated that sestrin tends to build up in muscles after a workout, although the role of this protein had never been fully understood. To investigate, a team of researchers created a line of fruit flies that had been genetically engineered to lack the ability to produce sestrin. These flies were then placed in vials that dropped every 15 seconds, causing them to repeatedly climb or fly back up to the top of their container, kind of like a treadmill for flies. After 3 weeks of training in their insect gym, normal flies displayed an increase in their performance levels and were able to maintain a higher intensity for longer periods.
Suddenly these muscle-bound flies.
Sestrin, who knew?
Yeah.
And where are we supposed to get sestrin? I will have to look into that. But
at Costco?
Yeah, maybe, yeah. You have to buy like 100 pounds of it, right? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and, you know, that's the thing about these studies on mice or flies. I mean, you know, who knows what the effect is on us.
WGN News at 10.
What? What was that one? Wasn't there a goodbye on that one?
Not really. WGN doesn't really say goodbye, or at least the two episodes that I've recorded so far.
Oh, okay. I think if this works to be a sort of breaker between stories, it's always got to be somebody saying good night, or that's the news.
Okay.
I like sending out 50,000-watt memos to people. Let's see. Next on the top 6 at 6, you may have heard about this. Sex education classes in Illinois may soon include addressing a modern issue. Lawmakers are proposing a bill that calls for schools to add sexting to the sex education curriculum. The law affects youngsters from 6th grade on up. A study by the American Medical Association reveals 15% of teenagers say they have sent a sexual text. Nearly 30% say they've received one. It's official. This is the end of civilization as we knew it.
Wow.
Thank you for making us your choice for news.
There we go. Oh, this is a good one. Dunkin' Donuts will sell a Beyond Sausage Patty with egg and cheese served on a sliced glazed donut. Really, if you're going to do that, do you care if it's like plant-based or not?
I wouldn't think so.
I don't know.
But they've already been selling the Beyond Sausage, right? I mean, that's not new.
No. This sandwich, only available this week. It's the latest promotion for the plant-based protein since it launched nationally in November. The Beyond D-O-double-G sandwich, as it's called, was inspired by rapper Snoop Dogg's passion for plant-based protein and love of glazed donuts, according to a press release. Oh, I get it. So it's Snoop Dogg's thing. Mm-hmm. Beyond D-O-double-G sandwich. Is that right? Is that how they want us to call it?
Should we go get a bunch downstairs?
No.
Yeah.
Oh. No, because I'll eat them all.
Thanks for joining us. Jimmy Kimmel up next.
that's what I like. I like that one, Joe. Yeah, we'll see if anybody else does. What did I do with that other story?
I don't know. We're so hungry now.
They seem to have misplaced the beginning of the top six and six here. Oh, you got it. Thank you, Dave.
It's just like, here, read this.
this just handed me. You know, it's show business. There's a show, and there's a lot of business here. I have a lot of paperwork. Okay, next up, we mentioned this earlier. Walmart is adding shelf-stocking robots to 650 stores by the summer. The robots, designed by the San Francisco-based Bossa Nova Robotics Company, are made to scan items on shelves to assist with price accuracy and with restocking. Those robots are already present in 350 stores. The 6-foot-tall devices contain 15 cameras each, which scan aisles and shelves and send alerts to employees in real time.
Wake up with Good Day Chicago at 7.
You know, see if we can find a goodbye in there, too. Yeah,
okay.
That's it. Good night, whatever. And we've been talking about this. Is this the sixth one I've done? I've lost track here.
It is.
Done five?
Yep,
okay,
is.
Thank
You've
you very
five.
Much.
We're counting over here. Hash marks.
Houston Astros general manager Jeff Lanau and manager A.J. Hinch were fired by owner Jim Crane yesterday following Major League Baseball's announcement of discipline in the sign-stealing scandal. A league investigation confirmed the Astros had cheated by using a camera-based sign-stealing system during the regular season and the playoffs of their World Series-winning 2017 season. As part of the league's penalty, the Astros lose first and second-round draft picks for the next couple years, and the organization was fined a record $5 million. Major League Baseball said in its statement that if Lanau or Hinch engage in any future material violations of MLB rules, they will be placed on the league's permanently ineligible list. And, of course, after this, after the initial MLB action, Houston fired them. And Dave and I were talking about this earlier, and, you know, this is interesting, too. Somebody texted us at 630 saying that we should refer now to the Cubs' 2016 World Series championship as the only legitimate World Series winners in the past 4 years. Think about that. Yeah, maybe.
I'm not sure. I don't think there's been evidence yet that Washington cheated last year.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. The Nationals beat Houston, who cheated Boston. Well, okay.
Oh, I see what they're saying.
Yeah. Rick Morrissey in the Sun-Times writes, I never thought I'd write the following sentence, but then Monday happened, and he says, maybe Pete Rose should be in the Baseball Hall of Fame. That's what you were saying, Dave.
Yeah.
And then he went on to say that the best response would have been to strip the Astros of their championship and give it to the Dodgers, who lost the series in 7 games. But that would have been MLB taking a bat to the integrity of the sport and thus to its money-making capability. It wasn't going to happen. And Paul Sullivan in the Tribune, writing about this, said, let's see, next comes the discipline for former Astros bench coach Alex Cora, now the Red Sox manager, who is portrayed as the mastermind in the scheme and could receive a draconian penalty when MLB's sign-stealing investigation into the 2018 Red Sox concludes. Yeah, that's next, isn't it?
Well, I guess so, yeah. And I wonder if they would have to even take it a step further against Boston, if it turns out they have the same kind of deal going there.
And Paul Sullivan points out in the Trib that maybe the reason Major League Baseball didn't go further with some of the players was that the players' union would get involved and things would get a bit messy and difficult.
right. And time-consuming. And,
right.
I mean, this would be stretched out. Or guys' careers would be over before there would be any sort of punishment.
Yeah. The commissioner argued it was too difficult and impractical to determine which players deserved to be penalized, even though in the report he specifically cited Carlos Beltran, now the Mets manager, as one of the instigators. If Beltran was in as deep as he's portrayed, he deserves a lengthy suspension as well. Yeah, good point. The guess here, writes Paul Sullivan in the Tribune, is that any suspensions of players would have led to so many grievances filed through the players' yeah. union, it wasn't worth the trouble from MLB. It's much easier to blame the leaders, lop off their heads, and then move on.
But this thing seems to have so many tentacles with guys who have ties to that team or to the organization and are elsewhere now. So that's the problem. How do you put all the pieces together?
Yeah, and this is going to be talked about for a long time. And then as we mentioned earlier and as you pointed out, Dave, that there will be a little rethinking maybe about steroid users in the Hall of Fame, Pete Rose in the Hall of Fame, Rick Morrissey in the Sun-Times is writing another sentence I never thought I would put down. Maybe there should be a special wing in the hall for steroid users. I mean, this opens up a whole can of worms for Major League Baseball and sports in general.
And also, you know, don't forget, Houston had that whole thing during the postseason this year with the executive who was, like, insulting a female
right.
sports writer in the clubhouse. Things have not been good in Houston. No. I mean, I know they won a World Series, but...
Yeah, I know. And, you know, and most people are wondering about players being disciplined since they were behind the cheating and they knew about it, but it's just a big headache for Major League Baseball and the commissioner to do anything more than what they did already. Were you surprised that the Astros went ahead and fired the manager and,
no, when
and
I,
the general
manager?
When
the story first broke yesterday, I was like, well, wait a minute, how are these guys keeping their jobs? And like an hour later, we found out they weren't.
They were originally suspended
for
a year?
They were suspended by Major League Baseball for 1 year. But then the owner, Jim Crane, stepped in and said, they're gone.
Well, you think you're having a bad day? Not so much, huh? 6:28 right now, and Bob Surratt's record collection will be on the air after our news update. We'll take you down to the basement vault here in the Bob Surratt building, and I think you're going to enjoy going back in time for a bit of rock history. That's coming right up here.
And that's the way it is.
This has been the Top 6 at 6 with Bob Surratt on WGN Radio.
As I mentioned, the Bob Surratt record collection has been moved now very deep in our cavernous sub-basement here in the building. And this morning, we want to play something from that collection and give you the story of an iconic performer who changed his name on this date, January 14th, back in 1966, so he wouldn't be confused with a rock and roll monkey. More about that and his music in a second. First, let me grab my microphone here and take a walk downstairs to the record collection vault, and then we can visit with the musicologist I've hired to curate my collection, Radio Dave. Let's head down there right now, see if he is awake in the vault. Dave! Morning, Dave! You there?
Good morning, Bob. We don't get many visitors down here in the depths of the WGN Bob Surratt building. Thanks for dropping by. The legendary show business icon you're talking about was born David Robert Jones. He called himself Davy Jones on his early recordings. They all flopped. Maybe it's because there was another much more famous Davy Jones, a member of the Monkees. So David Robert Jones figured out it would be a great idea to adopt a different appellation. He had a sharp sense of humor. He thought to himself, self, I'll choose the name of a legendary and large American bear-killing knife. That's what he did. It was on this date in 1966, January 14, that David Robert Jones began to find fame as David Bowie. and from 1975, we found a copy in your record collection of Fame, David Bowie's first number one hit single. I'll play a snippet while you hike back upstairs to your WGN radio broadcast booth for the rest of your super hit morning and solid gold day.
David Bowie with John Lennon on that record. He's on the backup vocal. He co-wrote Fame. Hope you enjoyed our little skit. And a reminder about Radio Dave, in addition to curating the record collection, he moonlights as the host of a really, really cool podcast, Rare and Scratchy Rock and Roll. You can check it out. rareandscratchy.com.
We had a tour. They didn't bring us down there.
Well, no, you guys are not qualified yet to go down in the vault.
Our badges don't work down
check
there.
Check with HR, see if you can get... You got to submit a lot of paperwork and go through a security check, a background check.
Fingerprints.
Bring in your passport, and then you can come down to the vault with me maybe next week.
They got any of those massage chairs down there?
No, that's on the second floor, Super Joe.
Yeah. You know, got to keep the record collection safe. Time to check in with the Block Club Chicago folks and Jen Sabella with us online. Good morning, Jen. How you doing?
Good morning, Bob. I'm good. How are you?
All right. Let's get right to some neighborhood news. I haven't seen them lately, but for the first few days of the new year, I always enjoy the lovely holiday scene of Christmas trees at the curb and in the garbage. And you've got a story about recycling those trees.
Yes. Yeah, so the city actually, this is rare. This doesn't happen in a lot of other cities. The city recycles Christmas trees and they turn the trees into mulch. So if you have a fresh tree and you're done with it, you drop it off at a neighborhood park, they will mulch it up for you and you could use some of the mulch for your garden. Or you can just, you know, get rid of your tree in a more eco-friendly way. A lot of people don't know about this. So a cyclist who runs a pedicab company, so those guys who have their little carts in the back of their bikes and they take you from concerts at Soldier Field or wherever, he was noticing them, and it's his off-season because it's cold out, and he started just filling his cab with trees and taking them to Humboldt Park to recycle them. So he is letting people know in the, you know, West Town, Humboldt Park, Ukrainian Village neighborhood that he will come for your trees if you just have them on the curb, or if you want to just give him a call and have him pick them up, and he will take them to get recycled.
We needed to know about this a week or two ago, didn't we?
Right. Yeah. So there, we did have a story up about the recycling locations, but a lot of people just didn't recycle them. So there are some. If you spot them in your alley, if you did recycle your tree and you notice that a neighbor of yours has a tree in the alley, you can text this guy, give him a call. We have his number on our website, and he'll come get it. And you don't have to. You can feel a little better about yourself that you did something nice for the earth today.
Yeah, always nice. Next, we have more on the aftermath of those weekend storms that ravaged the lakefront. What's new here?
So yesterday, all these photos started flowing in from cyclists and joggers along the lakefront trail in Lincoln Park and Lakeview and into downtown, just giant chunks of asphalt covering the trail. This has been, according to one cyclist that our reporter interviewed, the worst he's ever seen after commuting for 12 years. The lake levels have been so high, even since the spring, as we know, like it was just a very wet year in 2019. And the storms and those high waves over the weekend just decimated the lakefront. So all the way down in South Shore, a lot of apartment complexes have like significant damage. Neighbors were out there putting out sandbags, and all the way up in Rutter's Park, the beaches are flooded. And yeah, along the lakefront trail, even the new overpass near Navy Pier, it's been ripped up. So the park district says it's going to replace the asphalt, but it's not the season to do so. So they're urging everyone who uses the trail to commute into the city to use caution. You're going to have to get off your bike and walk it for a few minutes if you're biking downtown, just until that can be repaired. But a lot of people are saying, you know, this is going to be an ongoing problem. The lake is so high. So I know the Army Corps of Engineers has been working with the city to try to remedy the situation. So hopefully a solution is coming.
Yeah, I didn't get to the lakefront in the wake of those storms, but I was talking to people who did see some of the damage, and it was a lot more than just high waves crashing over the road, wasn't it?
Exactly, yeah. Like, these photos that we saw are just unbelievable. We have some of them on our site now. Just big chunks of asphalt just washing up to shore, completely blocking the path along the lakefront that so many people run or bike on every day. And it came pretty close to, you know, a lot of people. One parking lot we saw in Rogers Park just completely flooded. It was, you know, covering cars in a building lakefront parking lot. So, yeah, a lot of people living along the lake are a little freaked out about that's like the first big storm of the season, what's to come.
Right, exactly. And only in Chicago would we have a story about a board game based on a serial killer. Tell us about this.
Right. So, you know, true crime is very in right now. A lot of podcasts and a lot of TV shows focusing on, like, historic serial killers. H.H. Holmes, probably one of Chicago's most notorious serial killers from the 1893 World's Fair, who tortured and killed people in his Inglewood mansion. There is a board game in the works called Crimes in History, H.H. Holmes Murder Castle, and the creator of the game allows players to try to escape the murder house. It has little, like, historic nods to different rooms that he had in his house that actually existed in the mansion at 63rd and Wallace on the south side, where this terrible person killed a lot of people back in the day. So yeah, they're actually raising money for the game on Kickstarter, which is how a lot of board games are funding themselves now. They try to build an audience and then get it funded that way. So they have about $20,000 to go to finish the game, but they're about $10,000 into their Kickstarter goal. But if you are interested in navigating the H.H. Holmes murder mansion, trying to get out of there in this board game, you can check out our site, and we have a link to the Kickstarter.
Yeah, one of the most popular books of recent years was the Eric Larson book, Devil in the White City, which was all about the murders and Holmes, wasn't it?
Yes. So this takes it to a little bit more of a playful level. But if you are interested in this history, it would be a good game for you. There are the characters in the game are fictional, however, so they're not trying to mimic real victims of H.H. Holmes, which I think is a good idea.
Yeah, I think so, too. There's your extremely local news update from the co-founder of Block Club Chicago, Jen Sabella. Thanks, Jen. And we'll check in with you folks tomorrow. Have a great day.
You too, Bob. Thanks.
We're talking also about something very local here this morning, the anniversary of the great Chicago blizzard of 79, when it started snowing around here and around all of northern Illinois and northwest Indiana January 13th, and then it continued on this day, the 14th, and ended up with 21 inches of snow. And in some areas, 29 inches of snow. And we've got quite a few texts about this morning from folks asking questions like this. Do you remember the Valentine's Day snowstorm in 1990? Yes, and a lot of people checking in on this storm, which was memorable. Somebody said that they worked in Schaumburg at the time. It took 6 to 7 hours to drive from Schaumburg to Chicago on the north side. Traffic was totally stopped on the Northwest Tollway. And from 7:08, I was at DePaul University on this day in 79. School was closed down, so we went to Kelly's Pub and saw a CTA bus coming down Webster trying to turn north on Seminary. Yeah, because what the buses were doing was just going down any streets they could. So they were turning off of their routes, and people were just trying to get home or where they were trying to go any way they could. The Great Blizzard of 79 anniversary on this date started snowing on the 13th, continued on the 14th. We'll have more on that coming right up. Also, coming up, I love talking to sleep experts on this show, and we've got an interesting story about sleep apnea to tell you about, and then an item about going to the movies and how it actually can count as a light workout. Really? That's the kind of exercise we like to hear about. First up, though, we'll get to the news. That's coming up next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. The other memorable part of that blizzard of 79 that was occurring on this date back in 1979 is that it turned Chicago weather into a political issue because Mayor Blandick at the time famously talked about how the city is clearing out the snow, everything's going to be fine. And I clearly remember watching him on the Channel 2 News at 10 with Bill and Walter talking about this. And then after that, all hell broke loose because nothing was fine in the city. Everything was messed up. The deployment of plows was delayed. They couldn't keep up with the snowfall. And much of the snow was unmoved for about 2 months, causing all sorts of delays, trains, buses, the airports messed up, trash collection, and they say that that was primarily responsible, and it certainly was, for Mayor Blandick's defeat, and Jane Byrne became mayor. And since then, whoever is in charge here, make sure that the snow is removed quickly, and and nobody goes on TV and says everything's fine, unless it really is. That's a gentle wake-up sound, isn't it? It's 10 after 7. And talking about waking up and sleep, I can't get enough information about this topic, and we have somebody on the line now who specializes in sleep breathing disorders, and he's a sleep expert. Good morning, Dr. Hal Stewart. How you doing today, Doc?
Hey, good morning. Doing great. How are you?
Good. Anxious to hear about sleep apnea and a new study that is pretty incredible. But first, let me see if I can get a straight answer on this, because I've been asking this question ever since we started on this shift. Everybody talks about now getting 8 hours sleep is ideal, and more medical studies are showing that this is critical for heart health. Getting at least 7 hours, preferably 8 hours sleep, which nobody gets anymore. But my question is, and maybe you have the answer to this definitively, if you take a nap for like an hour or two in the day and then sleep like six, does that count as your 7 or 8 or not? Or do you need to get it all in one stretch?
That's a great question. And the answer to that is no, it's not the same. If our bodies are getting proper sleep, and it's not necessarily getting 7 to 8 hours sleep, it's the quality of sleep that you're getting during that time. Now, 7 to 8 hours should be the norm, but trying to make up for that during the day throws off the whole circadian cycle. And so the ideal sleep pattern would be a regular routine, sleeping at night 7 to 8 hours, but that sleep needs to be a proper sleep where you're going in and out of the sleep phases, going into the deep REM sleep. That's REM stands for rapid eye movement. That's the time the body heals. That's the time the brain reboots, if you will. If you've ever had a computer glitch, sometimes you just reboot it and everything's okay. If a person is not going into those phases properly throughout the night, they're never getting that restful sleep for their brain. So they may sleep 7 or 8 hours, but if they're stop breathing for 10 seconds or more than 5 times per hour average during the night, then they are quite likely not getting the restful sleep that they need. And then that leads to daytime drowsiness, kind of a foggy brain. You try to supplement that with caffeine. You need to take a nap in the afternoon. That's not normal, or that's not healthy. Taking a nap every afternoon is although it's nice if you're able to do that, it's really not necessary if you're getting proper sleep. So sleep hygiene and, of course, having your condition looked at to see if you do have sleep apnea or snoring, upper airway resistance. There's several different sleep disordered breathing, apnea being the most popular one, so to speak, in that more and more people know what that means.
Right. I want to talk to you about a new study, and the headline caught our eye: losing tongue fat could ease sleep apnea. More about that and napping with the sleep expert, Dr. Hal Stewart. We're talking with Dr. Hal Stewart, a dentist who specializes in sleep breathing disorders. It seems like lately, Doctor, I've heard from more people who have one kind of sleep disorder or another. Sleep apnea, is it affecting more people now than ever?
I believe that it's probably affecting as many people as it has for the last 25 or 30 years, this past generation, but it's just coming to the forefront that we understand it more and we know what to look for. Just like, cigarette smoking was not proven to be unhealthy for decades. Yeah, back some of the old commercials, there were actually cardiologists doing commercials, or, a cardiologist that plays one on TV. And 4 out of 5 doctors recommend, for those patients who smoke, recommend this brand of cigarettes. You look at some of the old commercials, it's hilarious.
Right.
But you would never see that happen now, because we know. Now we've dissected sleep anatomy. We've dissected sleep physiology. We know that it is extremely important. As a matter of fact, what I see in my practice is, because we see this is something that if you understand it, you can treat, you can prevent it in very young children, and for toddlers or adolescents, you can actually treat it. And what you see is they start behaving better at school. Their ADHD goes away. Their ADD goes away. And we have a whole generation of kids being medicated unnecessarily because many of them suffer from a sleep disorder. And there's a primary reason for that, and it's underdeveloped jaws, which would create the appearance of a large tongue. And that's the study that you referenced earlier about fat tongue. I don't really see that. What I see is a large tongue in relationship to jaw size. And there's a lot of good reasons, or I'll say good reasons. There are overwhelming evidence showing why jaw sizes are smaller now than they were, say, a couple hundred years ago. And it's because of epigenetic factors. Genetically, we're built to have normal jaw sizes, but when that proper growth and development of the jaw is interrupted after a child is born, then the jaws won't develop properly. And it's something like the frog in the kettle boiling. It's just, it's not something that happens overnight. Oh, all of a sudden I've got small jaws. This is something, a developmental issue that's affected by a lot of what we call epigenetic factors, environment, habits, allergies, things like that. And there's a whole reason for that happening, and it's happened over the last several generations. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, we think of obesity and sleep apnea going together, and I guess it raises the risk, but really this can affect people at any weight, can't it?
Yes. Yes. Obesity certainly is one risk factor, but many of my patients are, you know, an average patient of mine would be, you know, 35 to 50 years old, fit, you know, they play tennis, they run, they exercise, but they're suffering from sleep apnea. And some of the worst that I have are, you know, mothers in their 40s and 50s who are very active. They are not obese. They're very fit, but they have these very small jaws, and everything gets pushed back into the airway space, especially when they're sleeping.
And this is a study about the tongue fat. I mean, who knew about this? And so losing tongue fat, I mean, you lose tongue fat if you lose overall body weight, don't you?
Right. Yes, you do. And not only the tongue, but the throat tissues. You're going to lose weight everywhere when you exercise. Certainly, we see it more in, you know, different areas of the body. But how many people that, you know, have lost a lot of weight and you see it in their face? You know, their face looks different. So we have fat everywhere. And if we have excessive fat, then that's never good.
Yeah, well, Dave Ennett's got no fat on his body anywhere, but he's got some sleep issues.
Well, yeah, I was diagnosed, I think, about 5 years ago with sleep apnea now, and I've worn an oral appliance that my dentist made that has, I think, really improved the quality of sleep, though limited, that I get. But I just wonder, what other options are there for treatment of it? And also, does it ever just go away? I mean, it feels like when I don't wear the appliance now that I don't have the same issues I used to have, that maybe the shape of my air pipe has kind of changed a little bit. Does it ever go away?
In some cases, it could. It could improve with as a patient gets more educated on sleep hygiene. And but normally, it won't just go away on its own. Normally, in the vast majority of cases, it's just going to get worse if it's not treated. Now, the device that you use is called a mandibular advancement device, or MAD device, and that is a way to treat the airway while you're sleeping by pulling your jaw forward. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you pull the lower jaw forward, it opens up the airway. Another treatment, of course, people have heard the term CPAP, and that's probably the gold standard as far as just treating sleep apnea. But it's cumbersome. People don't, you know, it's hard to travel with CPAPs. Oh, they've gotten better. They have travel CPAPs now. And that's a machine that just pushes air into your system through, you know, past the overdeveloped tissues or the collapsed airway, and you breathe, you don't snore. It works very well, just like your device works well, as you know, if you wear it. And the problem with CPAP is that a lot of people won't tolerate it. They don't want to wear it. They don't like it. And so they're left with either what you've done, or there's a new treatment. It's not that new. It's been around for about 10 years, more so in Europe. We're doing it in my practice now, where we can actually stimulate jaw growth in our patients. And if the jaws grow a little bit, open up, the tongue and the tissues can move forward, and they're not being impinged on the airway. And that's a definitive way to treat airway issues, not only when you're sleeping, but during the day. Because these people have an airway issue. And when I say these people, I include myself. I had an airway issue, and that's one reason that got me so interested in doing this for my patients. But when you have an airway issue, it's 24/7, not just when you're sleeping. It just gets the worst when you're sleeping, because your muscles relax and you go into paralysis when you go into that deep REM sleep. Then all of a sudden you can't breathe, and now you wake up out of it, and you do that you know, all night long, and you never get the restful, restorative sleep that you need.
Doc, how do you know when you've got a real problem, a sleep apnea issue or some medical dilemma? If you're not getting good sleep, if you keep waking up during the night, you're not getting deep sleep, does that always mean you've got an issue like this?
Well, I don't like to use the terms always, but it's a really good indication. If you're getting up several times during the night to use the restroom, that's one sign. If you have daytime sleepiness, if say 1-2 in the afternoon, you're sitting in at your desk at work or wherever, and if you just can sit there and relax for a second, if you find yourself going to sleep, that's not normal. Kind of a brain fog. People have brain fog. That's a sign. You know, the dark areas under the eyes that people get, and there's so many commercials on TV on how to make that go away. That's a direct result from having an upper jaw that's too small, which would in turn create an issue with the tissue being pushed back into the airway. And so that's a sign as well.
I think the entire morning crew here at WGN is going to be in Dr. Hal Stewart's office today after 9 o'clock.
I'm checking my jaw to see what's going on.
Yeah. Nobody gets enough sleep. All right, Doc, and before you leave, so if you are going to take that nap during the daytime, how long should it be or how short should it be? If you're not getting enough sleep at night and you do want to take a nap.
Right. I want to be clear. If you're not getting enough sleep at night and you need to take a nap in the afternoon, by all means, take it. But remember that that's a kind of a desperate attempt to recharge your brain. But a nap needs to be no longer than 10 to 15 minutes.
Oh, no. 10 to 15 minutes.
Yeah, there's a lot of good that will come for what we call a cat nap.
Okay. All right. I'll try it. Our thanks to Dr. Hal Stewart, dentist and sleep expert. I appreciate the information, although I'm disappointed by some of it, Doc. have a good restful day, okay?
Okay, thank you. You too.
All right, good job. Thank you, sir. And coming up after the news break, we'll talk about a plan to landscape the Kennedy. That's right. Put a grassy cap over it. And let's say good morning to the 27th Ward Alderman, Walter Burnett. Alderman, how you doing today? Oh, wait a minute. I got to press this button. Sorry. I'm still learning. Good morning, Walter.
Good morning, Bob. How you doing?
All right. I want to talk to you about this plan to landscape the Kennedy Expressway, put an actual green cap over it. We'll do that in a second. But first, a little bit about your ward. It's the West Loop, Greektown, East Garfield Park, the Near North Side, Old Town, West Humboldt Park, Goose Island, the Illinois Medical District, and also the West Loop, where you can no longer find a parking place. what are we doing about that?
Well, that's a hard one, Bob.
Yeah, it's so popular now with all the restaurants and the congestion there. I guess the good news is it's booming there. The bad news is you got to accommodate everybody coming in, right?
Yeah, well, we're trying to come up with more public transportation. I'm actually trying to talk to them about putting the L stop at Halsted and Lakes, seeing if we can get some money for that. Matter of fact, we just talked about that at a meeting the other day. Because, less people are actually driving cars, but also we have several buildings in the area that's building a lot of parking, too. That's coming online. They haven't been built yet, but about three Sterling Bay buildings all have about 600 parking spaces. So that's going to help with the valet parking. You know, the only challenge is nowadays with traffic, you got to consider Ubers. You know, Uber done put another whole spin in with parking in all neighborhoods because you've got to consider where the Uber stops are going to be.
Right.
So, you know, got to figure that one out.
And an L stop at Halstead and Lake would be a good idea. And, yeah, you know, you go into that West Loop area and you see what's going on there, and you see all the building still going on. So it's gonna get even more congested down the road here in the next year, isn't it?
Yeah, but, you know, we have a lot of young people moving to the area. Most of the new buildings that are being built are office buildings. So a lot of young people are coming there. Millennials are coming there to work. A lot of them actually don't like to drive. You know, the driving part really come in the evening time when folks want to come and go to the restaurants and all of those things. In the daytime, you pretty much have a lot of folks either taking Uber, riding their bikes, taking the train. You know, or they try to live close in the area, which we hope they move to the area so they can walk to work.
Right. And since Greektown is part of your ward, when guys like me try to pin you down on your favorite restaurant, do you actually answer the question?
No.
I thought so.
No, I don't. But there's a lot of great restaurants in the 27 Ward. I mean, all of them are good.
Yeah, there you go. He's a politician. Alderman, hang on, because I want to get to this plan to landscape the Kennedy Expressway, put an actual landscape cap over it. We were reading about this and talking about it yesterday when David Roeder wrote about it in the Sun-Times. The headline, Cap the Kennedy Plan, dormant for years, still has supporters. And Alderman Burnett is one of those. Hang on a second, Alderman, and we'll get to that. We're chatting with the Alderman of the 27th Ward, Walter Burnett, who has served the city well for, can this be right, 25 years, Alderman? Wow.
Yeah, 25 years. Thank God, Bob.
Good for you. At a recent neighborhood meeting, the Alderman brought up this idea of capping the Kennedy Expressway. Talk about this. What is this all about, and what's the idea here, Alderman?
Bob, we're getting so much density, right? And we don't have any public spaces in this area. You know, because this area was actually a skid row at one time, but there were a lot of industrial buildings. Wasn't a lot of public land, right? A lot of privately owned land. So we're looking for green space. So the idea to have green space in this area would be to cap the Kennedy, because that's the only real public space that we have is over the Kennedy.
Now, when you talk about this area, what exactly are you referring to?
Well, I'm referring about the West Loop and east of the West Loop. There's no green space in that area, and actually, a lot of developers in the past wanted to do something with capping the Kennedy. They wanted to participate because now the millennials and the new people that's starting to work in these areas, they want more of a quality of life where they work, right? They don't want to just work around, you know, bricks and iron. They want to be able to go out, relax, lay down, have lunch, you know, in the grass, all that stuff. I mean, the culture is changing. And a lot of these new office owners, you know, as you can see, everyone's rehabbing their buildings and they're making it more like, I wouldn't say family friendly, but more work friendly for all other people. So this would be idea to help their businesses. It would be idea to help us to continue to attract more millennials and a workforce to the city of Chicago, because, you know, we're competing with other cities for this talent, and we need to give them these amenities that they need. Plus, you know, of course, I'm biased because I'm trying to get it for my community, but there's a lot of reasons why we should be able to cap the Kennedy and put our money in it, and it'll pay dividends in the future.
How do you pay for this? How much would it cost?
Well, you know, if we can get some developers to come on, maybe we can get some city, some state money, and some TIF dollars. You know, I got to see. I know we had a TIF over there that exhausted. I want to see if the other TIFs that we have can, you know, port money over to that area, or we can bond the money. You know, there's a lot of ways of doing it. You know, right now, We have every large development pay into what you call a neighborhood opportunity fund, and millions of dollars are going into that fund. One of the things that I'm going to vote on today is going to bring several millions of dollars to the neighborhood opportunity fund. So if there's a will, there's a way. We can make it happen. And I think this new commissioner, I haven't talked to him about it actually because he's still getting his, he's still getting his feet wet. But he's very adamant about open spaces. I know they're concentrating on the west and the south side, but also we need to concentrate on the central area that actually brings all the money that's going to help the west and the south side. So we have to make an investment in the area that's going to help us make money in order to invest in the other areas.
You mentioned TIF dollars, T-I-F. Quickly, Alderman, explain what that is for folks who don't understand it.
So the TIF is called Tax Incremental Financing District. So what happens is when the TIF goes in, let's say your taxes you're paying right now is $100. When your taxes go up to $110, that $10 increment goes into a pot. That pot goes to the city, and the city gets to spend it in the community. So they take so instead of the money going to all of the different taxing bodies, it goes into that pot, and that pot's supposed to be spent in that community. And for infrastructure, excavation, demolition, acquisition, affordable housing. You can use it for parks and schools and, public buildings. So that's what a TIF does. So what it does, it kind of grabs the money and front load it, right? And it gives you an opportunity to do things. Also, you can borrow off of TIFs. There's a lot of things that, over my 25 years, we've been able to do a lot of innovative things with TIFs to make things happen.
So this is all about green space, open space, and I know a number of neighborhood leaders have talked about this plan to cap the Kennedy, but also pointed out that it could work for the Eisenhower Expressway near the medical district, couldn't it?
Definitely. I mean, it would be ideal for the medical district and for the United Center. I mean, right now, and not only that, the unique thing is right now there's plans in the medical district. Right now they're building a hotel in the medical district, right, at the county hospital. It's being built right now. It should be breaking ground this summer. They're trying to put movie theaters, all types of amenities in the medical districts because they're competing with other medical districts across the country. And all of them are trying to attract millennials and keeping them in their community and keeping them in their cities. So they're trying to change the area where it's bike friendly, dog friendly, all these great things where people can, don't want to leave work. We want to come to work and be happy. And so they're getting very creative with it. So it would be ideal for them to be able to walk across the street and we get more restaurants and all those different things. And they'll be able to enjoy more amenities. It'll be a win-win for the city. It'll bring more businesses to the city. Maybe the United Center may get an idea of filling in those parking lots with restaurants and buildings, right, if we were to do that.
And when you talk about the medical district, you're talking about the area off the Eisenhower around Rush, correct?
Right. So roughly between Ashland and Damon even, or Ashland and Weston, but roughly Ashland and Damon would be the most concentrated part.
And do you guys always point to Millennium Park as an example of how this could work, how it could generate a lot of money for the city?
Oh, definitely. Millennium Park is one of the strongest tourist attraction next to Navy Pier in the city of Chicago. It's known worldwide. Matter of fact, it's an identifier, for the city right now. When people see the beam, they think of Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do. Well, keep us posted on this. It's an interesting plan. What's next for you as far as pushing this forward?
Well, I got to talk to the commissioner. I have to talk to people in transportation. Of course, I may have to talk to the mayor. Definitely, I would say this. The mayor has a very sharp deputy mayor. His name is Shamir. He's very idealistic. He comes from the technology industry, started his own business. And he hears all of these things, and he put together all of the numbers. So, we have to see how we can do this. And again, if we can get some developers to come to the table to pitch in, which all of the developers that's building in these areas, I think it won't be that big of a deal to get them to pitch in. So we're going to just keep pushing.
All right, good for you, Alderman Walter Burnett. You're a busy guy these days with the 27th Ward and the West Loop, Greektown, the Near North Side, Old Town, West Town, Goose Island, the Illinois Medical District. You got another 25 years in you, Walter?
I don't know, Bob. We've tried to stay around as long as you, man. It looked like you've been having a long ride, too. I miss your face on TV, man.
Appreciate it. And just for the record, I'm a Greek Islands guy, okay?
I am, too. I like Greek Islands, along with all the other Greek restaurants down there.
I knew you'd get that in. Alderman, listen, thank you for letting us wake you up this morning. Appreciate the time. Always good talking to you. I hope to bump into you again down the road before too long.
All right. Thank you, brother.
All right. We'll see you soon. Coming up, we'll talk to Dean Richards about movies and more on the entertainment beat. And then a very interesting story about going to the movies, counting as a light workout. That's right. It could be exercise going to the movies. And that's the kind of workout we like around here. Another story we'll be talking about after 8 o'clock this morning, a study that has determined what age you are most likely to experience peak unhappiness and what age you're most likely to experience happiness. We'll see if this study is accurate. That'll be coming up right here. Good morning at 8:09. Bob Surratt, Human Alarm Clock. And a lot of folks making their movie plans now after the Oscar nominations. And we were intrigued by this story, headline, going to the movies counts as a light workout because getting immersed in a film speeds up your heart rate. That's right. Watching a film in the theater could be as good for you as light exercise, according to a new study. Researchers found your heart rate increases as much as it would during light cardio for some 45 minutes in the cinema.
Okay, is that with butter or without butter?
I think it's probably without popcorn completely. The body reacts and is stimulated as your brain becomes immersed in the movie, and that long period of focus also has benefits for the mind. According to the researchers, a trip to the movies could boost concentration and memory by focusing on one thing for so long instead of juggling multiple devices such as smartphones, tablets, and television when you're watching a movie at home. In a study of people who watched the live-action remake of Aladdin, researchers used sensors to track the heart rates and skin reactions of the viewers. The research was carried out by the University College of London. But here's the thing. You've got to always go to the bottom of these reports and find out things like this. The research was paid for by a company called View Cinemas. So there you go. Go to the movies, get a light workout.
Yeah.
All right. Is Dean Richards standing by? He is. Okay, let's say good morning. And how are you doing today, Dean?
I'm a health reporter now.
You are. You should be in great shape with all the movies you see.
I hope. Yeah, well, I think that disproves the whole theory, pretty much.
So are we done now with the aftermath of the Oscar nominations?
I was done at about 9 o'clock yesterday morning.
I'll bet.
All the reaction and the stories and the snubs and the rationales.
Yeah.
The whole thing, my favorite, and I said this yesterday, that I thought the biggest snub of the day yesterday was Adam Sandler not getting nominated for Uncut Gems.
Right.
Everybody else is trying to be polite and politically correct and, you know, why things didn't happen. Sandler said, all right, you didn't nominate me? I'm going to make the worst movie that you ever saw just to get even with you all for this.
I've got to see that movie because people like you are raving about it.
Yeah, it's great. Everybody, pretty much everyone that's seen it has loved it. Sandler also said that he's glad he didn't get nominated. Now he doesn't have to wear a tie, doesn't have to wear a suit for a little while. So, putting it really into perspective, he can go back into his sweats for a little while.
And before we move on, give us your list of the movies that should have been nominated but weren't.
Yeah, these aren't exactly snubs. I mean, there are huge marketing machines that made a lot of what happened yesterday happen. But there are just a lot of movies that fell through the cracks. And some of the movies that I loved yesterday, during the past year, include The Peanut Butter Falcon, Shia LaBeouf, who is just kind of this traveler. He's kind of escaping the realities of his own life. He bumps into, on the road, this teenager who escapes from a nursing home who has Down syndrome. And they travel together and get to know each other. And for the first time in this young man's life, he's treated with respect and dignity. And, you know, that we see that somebody who lives with Down syndrome have hopes and dreams and aspirations and talents. And it's one of the sweetest, most lovely, lovely movies. The Peanut Butter Falcon, I cannot recommend enough. I loved, Bob, did you see this movie yesterday, the Beatles movie that came out?
Yeah, I loved it.
Earlier in the year, about what happened if one day the world had no knowledge of the Beatles or any of their songs.
It was just a fun premise.
It was a fun premise, but also left me, at least, with the idea, what if you never existed? What would the world be like if your presence here never existed? What would it be like? So in a way, it was very thoughtful to me as well. It's called Yesterday. Another kind of music movie was called Blinded by the Light, which is a true story, by the way. This magazine writer who was brought up in London, he was of Pakistani descent, living under his father's very strict old country ways. And one day at school, somebody lets him listen to a Bruce Springsteen cassette, and it changes his life. These quintessentially American songs and lyrics completely change this guy's life. And it is a movie about Springsteen. If you're a fan, you'll love that. But it's a movie about family and tradition and honor and finding your own path, finding your own, you know, what really makes you happy in life. I love this movie called Booksmart with Beanie Feldstein. That is, it's a coming of age movie of these two high school seniors who have been goody two shoes their entire high school career, because they wanted to get into the right schools. And then they find out weeks before graduation that all of the slacker kids also are getting into the right schools, and they could have had fun all this time. So they set off to have a couple of wild nights before high school graduation. Really fun, really thoughtful, directed by Olivia Wilde, who did a great job in this year of movies in which there were no women nominated for Best Director this year. This is just one example where there could have been one. And maybe one of the biggest omissions of all, and definitely worth seeing again, is the Jordan Peele-directed film Us, that stars Lupita Nyong'o, about this family that goes to the summer beach home, and a family that looks exactly like them, doppelgangers, show up and terrorize the summer village. It's one of the best edge of your seat movies that you'll ever see. All of these movies overlooked this year for Jokers and Irishmen and Marriage Stories and all these films that had huge marketing departments behind them to push their nominations.
And all the movies you just mentioned, easily available, I imagine.
Absolutely.
Netflix or someplace.
Netflix are available in Bob, your favorite Blockbuster stores, if you can.
Yeah, I'm still thinking about the world if I never existed. There would be so many teenagers who never received T-shirts after they were the 15th caller. Dean Richards reporting on entertainment from Channel 9.
For news at 10, watch WGN. Micah Mater, Joe Donlin, Dan Rohn, and Chicago's most trusted meteorologist, Tom Skilling. For TV news at 10, watch Chicago's very own WGN.
Dean Richards at Channel 9 with the Entertainment Report at 8:22 now. And Dean, this this Vince Vaughn story, to me, this is kind of a sad commentary on how polarized we are today, isn't it?
Yeah, that if you know, one person says the sky is blue, somebody else is going to say it's red. Somebody's always ready to jump on somebody else. This is what happened. Vince, Lake Forest native, was at the national championship game last night, happened to be sitting in the private private box with President Trump and the First Lady. He was seen on camera talking with the president for a few minutes, and then he got up, he shook hands with the president and First Lady, and then he left. And fans went nuts on Twitter saying how disappointed they were in Vince, that he would shake hands with Donald Trump. Vince has had no comment on the whole thing. But conservative actress Christy Swanson came to Vince's defense, saying, why are people so upset that Vince would have manners and simply show respect to Donald Trump?
Yeah, to the office of president.
To
right?
The office of the you know, presidency. Think what you want, but you know, Vince is a nice guy. He's a very polite. He was raised well with good manners, and he showed his good manners. I have no idea. I've known Vince for decades. I have no idea where he is politically, but I do know that he's a polite person.
Yeah, yeah. And it's more of a commentary also on social media, maybe, and how sort of out of whack the importance of Twitter and Facebook, how all of that affects us now.
No question about that. People have... there's way too many avenues to hear what everybody has to say about everything.
Yeah, right.
I long for the old days, Bob, where you just, if you had an opinion, you kept it to yourself.
Let's talk about Pearl Jam and what's new with them.
Well, two pieces of news about Pearl Jam this morning. Number one, they've got their first studio album in 6 years that's going to be coming out March 27th. They made this announcement yesterday on Twitter, of course. Album's going to be called Gigaton, and it's their first album since 2013's Lightning Bolt. They also announced a brand new North American tour, but Chicago is only going to get one of those things. You'll be able to get the album on the 27th. Amazingly, Chicago is not on the list of the cities where they will be touring. They've so far only posted the dates until the end of July. So I have to think they're going to come to Chicago. I have to think they usually play at Wrigley Field. You know, they're big fans that's going to happen. But so far, it doesn't look that way. They're playing the East Coast. They're playing the West Coast. Very few cities in the Midwest. And then they go to Europe for about a month or so. So let's hope this is not a completed concert tour schedule.
Yeah, you never know. I remember when McCartney was touring his last go-round, and I kept thinking, well, they're going to announce Chicago any day now because he was playing all these Midwestern cities. Yeah. Never did play Chicago this last time, did
he? Yeah, yeah. And, you know, which is a shame. But Pearl Jam, you know, these guys love Chicago. Eddie Vedder, you know, loves Chicago. He loves the Cubs. He loves everything about. I can't believe that would not be the case. So we'll just keep an eye on the schedule. In the meantime, though, we've got some Ravinia news, concert news, which is super early because normally they don't even announce their schedule until about March or April, and tickets don't even usually go on sale until about May or so. But this morning, Ravinia announced that the group Train is going to be doing two nights at the Summer Outdoor Fest, August 21st and 22nd. Make your plans early. For Ravinia donors, tickets are going to go on sale on January 17th. For the general public, tickets are going to go on sale on January the 24th. So this is very unusual. They're not even going to announce the rest of the schedule until March 12th, I understand. And then, as I say, usually it's about a month or so after that tickets go on sale for those shows. But Train, more than just the train that stops in front of Ravinia, the group Train, It's going to be coming to Ravinia August 21st and 22nd. Tickets are going to go on sale January 17th and 24th.
Feels good just to think about summer in Ravinia.
Right.
And we have this story, Cardi B wanting to be a politician. Really?
Are you still in the Cardi B fan club? I know.
Of course.
I know that you've always been a huge fan of Cardi B. Cardi B, who is a life force in and of herself, has, you know, that very super Brooklyn-y accent, and usually, you know, wears you know, few if any clothing on stage. Yesterday, announced that she would like to get into politics. She says she feels like if she goes back to school and focuses, that she could become a member of Congress. She just needs to finish up her school. And
what grade level?
Wow. Mary.
I just can't see this happening. This is weird.
There are weirder things that have happened in Congress.
Yeah, that is true.
And other political offices that... you know, that have happened. So, you know, we'll see. But, that, you know, it's nice to have goals, right?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
And by the way, I noticed this last time I was at the movies. I meant to say this to you the other day, Dean. I really have figured out how they get you to buy the largest size popcorn, because I wanted a small popcorn. Oh. And at this particular theater, the young gal behind the counter pointed to the bag and said, "Oh, you mean you want the child size?"
Right.
They shame you, don't they?
They do shame you. They do shame you because, you know, it's... And the child size is, you know, it's like about the size of what? Like a small packet of crayons or something. It's like so ridiculously small that you can't have that. And by the way, that's about $8.
Yeah, of course.
And so then if you go to the next size up, it like two people could actually sit in the bag. That's how large that is. And before they actually give you the bag of popcorn, you have to sit with a loan advisor and fill out an application to be able to pay for the bag of popcorn, because it's so expensive. If you decide to get a beverage on top of that, you know, you're going to have to bring your 1040s for the last 5 years.
Yeah, consult David Hochberg.
David Hochberg should set up a desk at the movie theater to help people pay for their concessions.
That's how they make their money, isn't it?
That is the truth.
Yeah. All right. It's Dean Richards over there at Channel 9. Appreciate the info, Dean. All right, talk to you again tomorrow.
Bye.
Yep. And we will tell you about this new study that, according to the research, has determined the age where we're most likely to experience the most unhappiness, and then the age where we are the happiest. That's all coming up right here. Okay, quick quiz here. Papers on the floor. No cheating. Let's go to the newsroom first. Steve, we're talking about a study that was supposed to tell us the age people are happiest, the age they were most unhappy. Take a guess on both. What would you say?
I would say people are most unhappy when they hit like the retirement age, like close to retirement, because that's when all, at least I that's for me, because I'm 51 and all of the aches and pains are starting. The age is starting to show. It's just starting to feel my age. Mm-hmm. So I'm using that as a personal experience. I would say the happiest would be like 30 years old.
Okay, you're way off. Let's go to the traffic center, Mary.
I'm going completely opposite with him. I say unhappy at 30, and happiest at like 55.
Close. And Mr. Sports, Dave.
I'm closer to Mary on this. I'd say unhappiest at like 20, and happiest at 80.
Wow, well, you know what? I think you're onto something here. A new study from Dartmouth College found that the age most likely to experience peak unhappiness, 47.2.
What?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay. Uh-huh. I guess I was.
I just went with 30 because 30 is when you're like, oh, man, my 20s, my youth is over. You know, 30 is kind of like, that's when I just had kind of a little bit of a breakdown. But, of course, I was postpartum, so that could have done it.
Uh-huh. A breakdown with an asterisk.
Yes.
Data was collected from around the world. about well-being and age from 132 countries, and it suggested the happiness curve reaches its pedigree at precisely 47.2 years. Now, this is interesting. When are you happiest? Well, the study finds that by the time people hit their 70s, they are generally just as happy as they were when they were 18. Wow. So you have that to look forward
that's
to.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you're kind of
retired.
Yeah, you're supposed to be smarter as you get older, right?
And you're probably enjoying grandchildren, you know, maybe mm-hmm. that's, you know, you can send home after you are with them.
And better perspective on things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So there you go. 47.2.
Your travel.
Unhappy. 70s. Happy.
That leads a little credence to the midlife crisis scenario, doesn't it?
yes, it does. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's 8:42 right now, and we'll meet a Chicago Blackhawk when we have breakfast with the Blackhawk. That's coming up momentarily. January 14th, celebrating the anniversary of the Great Chicago Blizzard of 1979. If you were around here, you remember there was a forecast of 2 to 4 inches of snow. And then we ended up with just about 29 inches. It started snowing on the 13th, continued January 14th, and nobody could get anywhere. The airport was closed. Both were closed. Buses, trains affected. And also Mayor Blandick was affected when he famously went public saying that the city has this under control. We're going to clean up everything. It's all going to be fine. And it wasn't. And Jane Byrne got elected mayor. There's your anniversary date here. January 14th, 1979, we were digging out. And some places ended up with 29 inches of snow before it all stopped. And the snow was on the ground until March 6th. And the hockey players probably enjoyed it. Let's say good morning to Dylan Secura of the Chicago Blackhawks and have a little breakfast with him today. Hey, Dylan, how you doing today?
Hey, Bob, how's it going? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, good to talk to you. By the way, is your brother still playing hockey in Rockford for the Ice Hogs?
Yes, he is.
And that's Tyler, right?
Correct.
That where did you guys grow up?
Just outside of Toronto in a town called Aurora, Ontario.
And now you're a Chicago Blackhawk, and how are you enjoying the city?
Oh, it's awesome. It's, you know, in some ways it's kind of similar to Toronto, but a little bit bigger, but what an awesome place to play it is.
Dylan, you have had the opportunity here now to spend some time with the Blackhawks the last couple of years, and now came up this year in December back from Rockford. But the big moment for you came a couple of Sundays ago against the Detroit Red Wings, your first NHL goal. Kind of describe what that moment was like for you.
Yeah, it was a special moment for me. Waited a long time for that one. I think it took me longer than usual to get that one, but it was nice. It was nice to finally get that one, put that in the past. You know, I've been working pretty hard the last couple of years for that, and it's always special. You know, when you get your first one.
Do you guys save the puck?
Yeah, they save the puck. I think you know, the staff, they make a little plaque for you. They put the game sheet on it, the puck, and a couple pictures in a frame. So excited to get that one.
Well, the nice thing about it too, Bob and Dylan, was that it was a game where the Blackhawks against a team which has been down all year in the standings, a game that I think everybody looked at that game as a game the Blackhawks should win, and they got down early in that game 2-0, and that ended up being the tying goal, and then you guys put a couple on the board in the third period and able to win it. And so it's not just that you got a goal, but it's a goal that meant something in a game that meant something for the Blackhawks.
Yeah, for sure. I think whenever you can contribute on the score sheet, it's big, and especially when the team needs you, you know, there's a couple of big points on the line like that. I think at the point we're at in this season, I think every point matters for us if we're going to make a playoff run here. So it's always nice to help out and in a winning cause.
You guys are on a three-game road trip now in Ottawa to start. Are you getting healthy? Is everybody getting back to good health yet?
Yeah, I think so. I think we've been banged up a little here for a bit, but you know, it's nice to have guys step in and play a big role and help out any way needed. So you know, hoping to get back into the lineup too and help out the team and whatever they need me to.
Like a lot of guys, still early in your career, Dylan, you kind of get caught in that area where you're fighting for ice time, you're fighting to get some time, and there are other guys in the same situation as you, and you're somewhat reliant on some of the guys in front of you, and guys being hurt, and whatnot, trying to kind of to stay. Is that a challenge to be able to kind of find your spot where you're here for the long haul and not kind of riding that shuttle back and forth to Rockford?
Yeah, I think that's been probably the biggest struggle so far for my career. It gets tough at times, but you know, I think a little bit of competition, friendly competition throughout the lineup, and guys, kind of young guys getting in and out is always good. You know, kind of pushes you, but at the same time, yeah, it can be tough. Just not knowing where you're going to be the day after tomorrow or the next day or when you're going up, when you're going down or whatever it be. So I think it's important to play your game, try to find some confidence and do whatever you can to stick in that lineup.
Has the upside of that been the opportunity to play with Tyler a little bit?
Yeah, that's been awesome. You know, he's been a guy I looked up to kind of my whole life. You know, to have him down there and kind of mentor the younger guys. He's actually the captain down there now too, so he has a great relationship with the coach and, you know, everyone in the locker room. So it's pretty cool to share that moment with him and my family.
Hey, Dylan, for those of us who are fortunate enough to get to a Blackhawks game a few times during the season, every time you watch the opening videos and you hear the national anthem and the roar of the crowd there, it just, I know for me, it's like goosebump time. Do the players ever get used to that and just become numb to all that?
I think so. I think, you know, United Center, especially compared to other rinks, is definitely the best for the national anthem. It's probably the best place to play in the NHL, so it's always pretty cool, you know, no matter who you are. But I think definitely you get a little accustomed to it, and you can kind of block it out and focus on yourself and prepare yourself for the game.
As you look at this trip, you start in Ottawa tonight, you got Montreal, you go on to Toronto. We talked to Jeremy Colladin yesterday about the fact that this team has played pretty well on the road. You've been around long enough now to see some of that. Any sense from you as to why this team has kind of banded together when you've been away from home?
Yeah, I think that's tough. I think, you know, on the road, it's important that, you know, you're ready to start, and, you know, other teams are going to come out hard in their own barn. And I think we've done a good job of kind of matching other teams' intensities up to start and kind of getting that first goal and starting with the lead and, you know, taking the crowd out of it. I think we've done a good job of that. I don't know if there's one specific answer as to why we're better on the road, but, you know, going into this road trip, I think we have some confidence in ourselves and in our team, and, you know, hopefully can have a good road trip here.
So what do you do during the day before a game? What's your routine? Anything special?
Yeah, we'll have breakfast, and then we'll head over to the rink. We'll have an optional practice, but since I'm a younger guy, I'll never be able to take that option yet. So I'll go out there, I'll skate, and then we'll come back, we'll eat lunch, and then I usually nap for about an hour and go down, have a snack before the bus takes off for the game.
Yeah, you got to be around for a few years before you get to do what you want to do, right?
Exactly, yeah.
All right. Well, good luck to you, and great talking to you. It's Dylan Secura of your Chicago Blackhawks. Have a great game tonight.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
And we will get to the news next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, and we'll get a little preview of the John Williams Show. That's coming right up. Okay, no complaining allowed about the weather, even though we haven't seen the sun in a while. Right now, we would have been in 1979, in the middle of a 38-hour blizzard. So it's keep that in mind as you go through your day today. All right, let's strike up the band here, get ready to move on out of here. But first, there is the matter of finding out what's on the John Williams Show today. John is entering the studio now, and what's going on? Let me turn your mic. What's up, John?
Don't you think that blizzard was fun, though? Like, I would rather have a 38-hour blizzard than this.
No.
Who's coming with me? Who's coming with me?
Were you even here, John?
What year was that again?
79.
I wasn't even born yet.
Yeah, nice story. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Right. I was in grade school then.
John, you're the same age as me. That, I know where
Mary
you were.
Wasn't even born yet.
That was the beginning of weather as a political platform in Chicago, because Mayor Bilandic forced out Gene Byrne in because the mayor said, everything's fine. We're going to clear this snow out in a minute.
Should the Houston Astros have to, as they say, vacate their World Series championship?
Yeah, we've been talking about that all morning. Was the sentence stiff enough
today?
Yeah.
What did Dave Ennett say? Because I'm going to go with whatever Ennett's got.
I don't think they should vacate it unless it goes automatically to one of the Chicago teams.
No argument there from anybody.
Did you play the audio of the garbage cans banging together so you can hear it? I actually have that from one of the games. Let me play it for you after the news.
It's the high-tech cheating coming up next. Thanks for being with us. We'll see you tomorrow morning.